You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we're live. A crazy fight week is in the books, capped off by a shortened, changed up 7-fight card that was capped off by Alistair Overeem putting Augusto Sakai away in the beginning of the 5th and final round. As we welcome you all of you wonderful fight fans, to another edition of the People's Post-Fight Show for UFC Vegas 9 right here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Hack, being joined by Jose Youngs, Alex K. Lee, E. Casey Lydon is here joining us, also doing all the legwork on the production side as well, which is much appreciated. Welcome back, Casey. But if you're joining us live, thank you for joining us. If you're listening or watching after the fact, thanks for doing that as well. But Jose, this was an interesting one. We talked all about chaos. That was like the main theme of the preview show. But I got to be honest, if the UFC put together like these subsequent 7-8 fight cards like tonight's once in a while, and listen, this happened due to super unfortunate circumstances with a whole bunch of positive COVID tests. So I don't want to take that lightly at all. But having cards like this, every so often, accidental or not, it's kind of refreshing change of pace from a viewership perspective. With that in mind, your overall thoughts on the card tonight?
Mike, what did I say on our preview show? I'm going to let you answer this for me. What did I say on our preview show?
Until they get to the octagon, don't get too excited, essentially.
Exactly, 100%. I don't even want people excited when they're lined up, ready to make the walk after what happened to Trevin Giles. Anything could happen, and that is exactly – it happened to 2 fights this morning. So, 7. So what was it, like 8-9 fights, something like that? If that – and it was a fun fight. Like, I was entertained by pretty much every fight. Like, there were good stoppages. There were good scraps. There were great performances. So I think you said it best where these things happen due to unfortunate circumstances, but sometimes the outcome is exactly what we want. And it was a refreshing change of pace from some of the last few cards. So all in all, I thought this was a fun fight. It was a quick fight. I have no complaints outside of it. Maybe it wasn't the most stacked in terms of name value, but nonetheless, there's a lot of names that I'm sure people will remember moving forward.
AK, what do you think? And I guess the big question everybody wants to know is, what was your sort of litmus gymnastic scale rating you put on this card heading in, and how did it live up expectation wise?
I mean, just the way the card was unfortunately decimated. I mean, it couldn't be a higher degree of difficulty than like a 7. And it might have hit it. I mean, it's probably a 6.8, 6.9. So I know everyone who isn't aware of the system is like, what the hell does that even mean? What I'm saying is it was a good card based on kind of what we had ahead of time. And Mike, as you mentioned, you know, these things, it happened because of circumstances very much beyond the UFC's control. Of course, we wish nothing but the best for Marcos Rogério de Lima, Thiago Moises, who I know both withdrew because of positive COVID-19 tests, and some of Moises' cornermen as well. Kevin Tibidad, who we don't know exactly why, undisclosed reasons, so hopefully he's all right. Even well before today, Nico Montaño also tested positive for COVID-19, so hopefully everything's okay with her as well. But
How's Carol Rosa? Has anyone checked on her?
Carol Rosa, was she also – what was her
– they sent her to the hospital yesterday.
Oh, gosh, the botched weight cut.
Yeah.
Right, so there we go.
Let's also not forget – Brian Keller's original opponent, Ricky Simone.
Yes, cornerman tested positive. So hopefully everyone involved in these calamities is okay. But yeah, I agree. It's refreshing. I've always been an advocate for having less fights. I feel like 4 prelims, 4 main card fights is the way to go. Especially the way the cards are now, where they're kind of struggling to fill them up. Maybe you don't have to force the situation. It was cool that Ray Rodriguez, good for him, got the call and that they had him ready. That on paper, that was a good idea, but still... I think for fans, this is a very digestible card, and certainly for us in the media as well.
Well, I mean, at least on paper right now, September 19th is going to make up for everything, because with the reported addition of Hazmat Chimaev and Gerald Meerschaert, I think there's 15 fights on that card for September 19th at this point. So we'll make up for it. Who knows if they'll all make it there. Just watch the preview show, and Jose will tell you not to get your hopes up there. But just a reminder, we want to get your thoughts on the event as well, the performances, the current landscape of the sport as well. You guys like to do that. So whatever's on your mind, leave them in the comments. We'll get to them momentarily. But in the main event, Alistair Overeem just doing what Alistair Overeem does. He finishes Augusto Sakai in the final round. It was a very technical fight for a while. The clinch was used quite a bit from both guys as expected. But in the end, Overeem and his underrated yet brutal ground and pound gets it done. AK, let me begin with you here. What did you make of the Reims performance in the heavyweight headliner tonight?
I was actually really close. I did think it was going to go five rounds. I know a lot of people were assuming it would end in knockout, which it eventually did. But I think people thought it might have ended earlier than it ended up going. I did think, like, again, it's Sakai's really tough, really technical. I thought Overeem was going to win a decision. I thought it would be a little more comfortable for Overeem as well. I was actually really impressed by the pressure that Sakai put on him early, the fact that he's willing to battle him in the clinch, which seems like an insane thing to do when you consider Overeem's background. But Sakai looked pretty good in moments. It's just we saw Sakai, I don't know the last time he fought in a five-round fight, if ever. I'll have to look at the numbers. It might have been before UFC. But those championship rounds are serious. They are serious. And when you're facing a guy like Overeem, again, this was fight number 66. And we're just talking about MMA, not kickboxing. Pro MMA bout number 66. He's seen it all. He's seen everything. He's fought every style. He's fought every body type. He's fought people older than him. He's fought people younger than him. So he's not going to panic if he gets down a little early on the cards. You know, it was a little bit of a rope-a-dope. You know, you don't see that a lot in MMA, especially when Herb Dean is the ref. That rope-a-dope might end up in the fight being stopped, so you got to be careful. But I think Overeem was so smart. And I think he's a veteran of the game. He knew exactly how to make it look as he was on defense and not get hurt. And let Sakai gas himself out, which he did. And Sakai, again, not quite on the level for rounds four and five. So just a classy, classy veteran performance for Alistair Overeem.
So, I mean, as you can tell by the background, I'm not in Command Center 2.0. I'm actually in Boston at my parents' house, and I was watching the fights with my little brother. And, like, in the fourth round, he says to me, looking at Augusto Sakai, like, all bloody and kind of battered, he's like, oh, man. He's thinking to himself, why did I choose to agree to fight five rounds? Because he was just like, oh, I don't really want to be here anymore. But, you know, gutsy performance on his end. Jose, what did you think? Alistair Overeem's been doing this for a long time. He's, like we said in the previous show, he's got like 17,000 professional fights at this point, and he just keeps doing the damn thing. What did you make of the 40-year-old's performance tonight?
Well, it's very reminiscent of his last performance against Walt Harris. I mean, we talked about it on the preview show. Like, if they stopped that fight, Overeem and Walt Harris in Jacksonville, when Walt Harris was raining bombs down Overeem, I don't think any of us would have complained about the stoppage. It was that dominant. But Overeem withstood the violence, literally hit the switch, like the wrestling move, and then took top position and then finished it out with ground and pound. So that's pretty much exactly what happened in this fight. It wasn't a switch, but like once Overeem got on top, what was around four, he sliced him open, and you really saw that was where it turned, and then he got on top again, and he was throwing some serious like Donkey Kong punches, but he was throwing also like elbows to the body. So it's not like he was just unloading to the head and blowing. He was picking his shots and picking them perfectly. You don't see a lot of elbows to the body when you're on top. So it just shows another aspect of Overeem's game that's just veteranship. And yeah, he definitely lost the first two rounds in mine. I just wrote like 10-9, 10-9, and then you could argue that he like Overeem won the third round. But it seems like Overeem was throwing these one hard punches, like one kick to the body, one punch, one elbow. And Sakai was just unloading on combinations like left, right, leg kick, like uppercut, clinch up and throw a bunch. And Overeem was biding his time, saving his energy, because he knew if he took it to the canvas, this fight would be his to win. And that's exactly what happened. He conserved energy, withstood the onslaught, because, yeah, he got hit a lot, but it's not like he was all gashed up. He was blocking a lot of the punches. And, yeah, he might have eaten a few of those because some of them slipped in. But Sakai, I don't want to say he blew his gas, but Overeem definitely took over when they hit the championship rounds. Like I agree with you, brother. If that was three rounds, Sakai wins, but Overeem withstood the onslaught first three and came back and won. And that's exactly what he did in the Walt Harris fight. So props to Overeem for the gamesmanship and the veteranship. And it's the better man won tonight.
As most of you probably know by now, and if you haven't, make sure you jump on board. AK and I will be talking all things matchmaking on Monday morning on the podcast network, so make sure you subscribe so you can check those out. But Casey, let me ask you this. I mean, you've been covering Alistair Overeem for a long time. I would assume he's a guy that's sort of right up your alley when it comes to fighters that you watch and that you enjoy and that you have a ton of respect for. I think we have all of a ton of respect for Alistair Overeem at this point. But what would you like to see next for him in this crazy world and this crazy heavyweight division?
Derek Lewis.
He's fighting somebody.
He's fighting Curtis Blaydes.
Scratch that fight. Why? Come on. It's like, to me, like, wasn't Derek Lewis all over Twitter tonight just bagging on Overeem? That's the fight to make.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to take a fight away from Blaydes to give it to his teammate.
Yeah. But I mean, if Overeem's fighting main events versus Sakai, I mean, they can put him against anybody. I mean, Overeem is such a prize fighter. As long as the check clears, he'll fight his grandma. You know what I mean? Like, that's so. I think for Overeem, he really doesn't care. I'm sure he wants whoever's gonna pay him the most. So, I mean, if it's John, who knows? John Jones. I mean, it could be a lot of things. I doubt it'd be John Jones. I think John Jones is either getting Francis or Stipe or Brock. But I mean, Overeem's in a good position right now. That's all, and he can face anybody. Any decent name.
Yeah, I mean, if for some reason like Blades can't make it to the Lewis fight, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Overeem trains with him already. Yeah. He likes Colorado, and boom, we could just slide him right in there. We got ourselves a fight. But Jose, what do you think? If all things kind of play as they are schedule wise, what is next for Overeem?
I like the John Jones fight. I've always wanted to see those two fight, especially when Overeem was in Strikeforce and John was kind of on the rise. Like that fight, in my mind, was always a future fight. I mean, I've been asking Overeem about John Jones since right when he joined the UFC. I do agree with Casey. Like, I would want to watch the Derek Lewis fight. I think the heat is there, but Curtis Blaydes also has a lot of heat with Derek Lewis. So if they want to keep that fight, fine. There's not a lot of people for Overeem to fight that are coming off wins. Like, if they want to rematch him against Jairzinho, especially because he was like 4 seconds away from beating Jairzinho, fine. I also don't mind the Alexander Volkov fight because they were scheduled to fight before, and I think it was the St. Petersburg, one of the Moscow cards or something like that, and Volkov pulled out and Alexio Linux slotted right in. You know, Volkov doesn't want to fight another wrestler again. He's really going to want to fight a striker. And Overeem is a striker, and he is showing a lot of wrestling in wrestling. But it's not like he's Curtis Blaydes, where he's just drowning you for 25 minutes. So either one of those fights is fine. But like Casey said, as long as the check clears, Overeem will fight anyone. So literally just take a dart and throw it in the heavyweight division. Awesome. But if it was up to me, I like the John Jones fight, the Jairzinho fight, or the Volkov fight.
So Overeem's check for his victory tonight will clear. However, mm-hmm. he will not receive an extra check. He did not receive a bonus tonight. We'll get through all the bonuses in a second. But one man who did get a bonus was Ovin St. Preux in the co-main event. He violently knocks out Alonzo Menafield. And it was crazy. He was on What the Heck this week, and he pretty much called it to a T. Like, everyone, the general consensus surrounding the fight was, if it stays in the feet, it's Menafield. If it goes to the ground, you know, St. Preux will probably Von Preux him and submit him. And he said basically, like, remember the Shogun fight, Mike, when he was on What the Heck? Like, and the result of the fight ended, like, almost exactly how the Shogun fight ended. It was, like, a similar blow and everything. AK, one thing that really surprised me in this fight was the lines. He was the underdog heading in. His 39th professional fight, Ovin St. Preux is the underdog against a guy with 10 professional fights, albeit a very powerful guy in Alonzo Menafield. A, were you surprised with the odds? And B, were you surprised how the fight played out?
Yeah, I didn't know what the odds were until they mentioned it on the broadcast. I was surprised to hear that OSP was the underdog. Look, we all love sort of prospects who are unknown properties, but it wasn't like the loss of Devin Clark that Alonzo Menafield had in the fight prior to this one. It wasn't like you watched that fight, it's like, oh, like it was a fluke. Like, there were some fundamental things that, you know, a guy with only 10 fights under his belt, those are the weaknesses they're going to show. There's very tangible things. Now, you could assume, oh, well, he's going to make a big leap from that. It's the kind of loss you learn from. And I'm sure he did, and it's why he probably lasted as long as he did against OSP. But the experience gap is just huge. This was Menafield's fourth UFC fight and St. Preux's 22nd. So that's a bit, when you think of the names that St. Preux has fought, I mean, it's not just the experience, but he's fought guys at such a high level that to think a prospect like Menafield, so unproven, would just walk through him is just absurd. OSP, and by the way, you know, you mentioned how similar was the Shogun. I mean, really, I feel like the skateboard also made it all the way from Brazil somehow to the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. I swear I saw that skateboard slide in there and get right under poor Menafield, and he ended up falling right in his face. That's now 5 KOs in the UFC and 6 submissions for OSP. He is now tied Grover Teixeira for the most finishes with 11 in the UFC light heavyweight division, and I think increased his own lead for most light heavyweight subs. I'm including this one catchweight bout in there. So 6. Oh, sorry, he didn't increase it. I'm sorry, but he also has the record for most subs. So OSP, he's been around and pretty spectacular still.
He feels good right now. He said weight-wise, he felt better than he did 2 weeks ago before he got pulled due to the positive COVID test. So big win for OSP. What did you think of his performance, Jose? Because he looked pretty damn good tonight.
He looks really, really good, but also at the same time, just felt like Minifield was like stuck against the fence. Like he just wasn't doing anything. Like I did the Twitter reacts for the site, and they were all, why is Minifield stuck on the fence? Why isn't he doing anything? Why isn't he throwing combinations? Why is he doing X, Y, Z? So it was a lot of fighters complaining about what Minifield wasn't doing rather than what OSP was doing, which isn't always fair because OSP looked awesome. He was just picking apart. He had that. He was just unloading with the body kick in the middle. He was just eating him up with those leg kicks and the straight kicks to the body. And then when Alonzo Menafield tried to do something, OSP put him to sleep. So it just shows you how much you have to respect Ovin St. Preux's striking and power, because yeah, he has all these submission wins, but he can also put you to bed, just like he told you on What the Heck. So awesome performance for Ovin St. Preux. I have a few ideas of where he could go from here, but also at the same time, Menafield didn't do a whole lot. He basically just stood there circling with his back to the fence the whole time, just getting chewed up. And Ovin St. Preux did what he should have done and took advantage of it. So I don't think it's fair for people to be complaining what Minifield didn't do, because Ovin St. Preux looked absolutely phenomenal, because he was doing so well that Minifield was just lost. He did everything I think he wanted to do, he couldn't. So props to OSP for putting Minifield in such an uncomfortable position that he literally just couldn't fight.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the game plan was picture perfect. I mean, he used his length extremely well. He knew he was going to have to eat some heavy shots early on. He did. You know, OSP's kicking game is on point. He kept going to the body, and those are adding up. And the straight left hand was a huge weapon for him. Like I think DC even said, he uses it like a jab. But, man, he looked great. Big win for OSP. Curious what the viewers think about OSP's next move. He said he's not opposed to going back up to heavyweight if the fight is right, but now that John Jones is no longer the champion and things have kind of opened up at 205, he's pretty interested, and he's kind of got a little reinvigoration, if you will, at his light heavyweight career. But Casey, what do you think? What would you like to see next for OSP after that big win tonight?
Yeah, it feels weird saying OSP title contender again. It just feels odd to even think that, but who am I thinking? Just someone in the top 10. I mean, this fight was a weird fight in general. I mean, just even being booked. And, but OSP looked good. Just someone in the top 10. I mean, like I said, it seems just wide open right now, you know, the light heavyweight division. So I don't really think there's a really, like, you go, oh, OSP versus this guy. I don't think there's really – I think you just want to see OSP back in there again. And just maybe this is a new OSP after, you know, going up to heavyweight, just a different guy, man. But going back to the actual fight, like, I mean, I want to give OSP so much credit, man, but there were moments in that fight where Minifield just, like, I know guys have off nights, and maybe he had a bad weight cut, but man, I swear there was a good 90 seconds where I don't think he threw a punch.
No, yeah.
There were moments in that fight.
Yeah, that was what I was saying. Like, a lot of, when I was doing Twitter reacts, a lot of his fellow fighters were saying, why isn't he doing anything? They were complaining about. But then when he tried to do something, OSP put him to sleep.
But it was just, I mean, I know you're going to be positive as a great performance, great knockout, you know, the classic left hand from OSP. But man, I thought Minifield was just, that was just, he had a bad night. He was just very off tonight. I don't know if it was a bad weight cut, just something going on outside the cage, but you know, fighters show up sometimes, they're on, sometimes they're off, and I just felt Minifield just was not there tonight. Made that big weight cut, getting hyped for a fight, doing it again 2 weeks later. Was it 2 weeks?
Yeah.
OSP being the veteran, just had more experience, and there's no more jitters in that sense, you know. But it was a very odd performance from Minifield. I was disappointed, but
yeah, I think obviously the UFC sees something in him. They keep putting him in these spots, fighting a Devin Clark and then fighting an OSP. And I know Minifield wasn't the original opponent for OSP. I forget who it was, but he slid in there and then the fight was made, and here we are. But, you know, maybe give him a step back at this point. I think, like, the winner, maybe, I mean, Ed Herman's a veteran, but I think, like, kind of where they're at in their careers. I know Ed Herman's fighting Mike Rodriguez, maybe the winner of that. I don't know.
You're talking about OSP?
No, for Minifield moving forward. Okay. OSP, I got to think about a little bit more. But
I got three possible scenarios for OSP, and they all make sense. So either if he wants top 10, he does the rubber match with Nikita Krylov, They both 1-1, both with submission wins. One of them was that Von Flue choke, and the other one was Krylov got revenge with the rear naked choke. They could do the rematch with Volkan Ozdemir, because the first time they fought, Volkan was brand new, last minute opponent. OSP was on a 2-fight losing skid and coming off a violent knockout loss to Jimmy Manoa. Now the tables are turned. Volkan Ozdemir is coming off a violent knockout loss to Jiří Procházka. If they wanted to give OSP, do him a favor for taking that initial fight and they run it back again, I wouldn't hate that fight either. And then the third one, the winner of Shogun Paul Craig, because they tried to rebook Shogun versus Ovince St. Preux. I think it was on that Japan card. Before when then Shogun pulled out and Yushin Okami slid in and OSP tapped him with a Von Flue choke. Paul Craig sitting at 15. If he, and obviously that first fight was like it was a draw or something like that. So I think either the winner is Shogun Craig, and I think Shogun will win. They can finally book that rematch against OSP, or OSP rematches Volkan Ozdemir give after their first fight when OSP stayed on that Manchester card. And that was also Volkan's first win. And then he went on that run of stoppages. And like, remember, it was like in 12 months, all of a sudden he was fighting for a title. The first win was against OSP. Or they could do the rubber match with Nikita Krylov. Any of those fights make sense. They're all top 15 fighters. And if Ovince St. Preux really wants to get back in title contention, I think any one of those would be a fun fight.
So you suggested three rematches, huh?
Yes. Yeah. One rubber match and three rematches. Two rematches.
That's how long OSP's been around. The fact that he's had so many storylines with different guys. Yeah.
Like, Anthony Smith would be fun, but I think Anthony Smith's going to take time off. Misha Cirkunov is fun. Like, Johnny Walker has a fight booked already. Ryan Spahn, unless you want to give him the winner of Walker and Ryan Spahn. But I just think OSP has done these UFC so many favors, like fighting John Jones on short notice, fighting a no-name, like, at the time, Volkan Ozdemir on short notice. And then he decapitates Corey Anderson in Madison Square Garden. I think give him another show. Also, those are all fights that they've tried to book and they've fallen out a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, I got a fresh matchup for you, which you kind of mentioned him, but I think this is a guy who we've all done a bit of fantasy matchmaking for over the last few weeks. You know, if they were going to put him in there with a guy who's only had three UFC fights, why not put OSP in there with a guy who's only had one UFC fight?
Oh, don't you do it.
How about him? Why can't he get the Jiří Procházka fight?
Because that's Alexander Radchik's fight.
I don't like that fight.
I'm just saying it could happen. You're talking about going to give him a reward. It's possible. It's possible. I think we've matched up Jiří with a lot of guys on whatever various shows, A side, post fight shows. On to the next one, I'm sure.
Jiří and Alexander Radchik are like 5-6, and then the others, all the people above him are booked ahead of him. I like that fight more.
I just want to see 22 UFC fights, 22 UFC fights versus one. I just want to see, like, because again, it's weird because we're criticizing the Menafield matchup, and rightfully so. And yet, but yet the Jiří one would make it just makes sense. But the experience level as well. It would be Prochazka's 32nd pro fight. So obviously, we're there's that real. It lines up a little bit better in that sense.
Yes. There was no fight of the night bonus. If there was, it was definitely the main event. But all performance bonuses. We talked about OSP. Brian Kelleher gets his third bonus of 2020. This guy's year has just been unbelievable. Muniz gets himself a bonus as well after that slick submission. But AK, I think I'm going to allow you this time to wax poetic about a man that you've been singing his praises for a while. The other man who got a performance bonus, Michel Pereira, gets a big win. Waxed poetic. What did you think of his performance and how did you feel when it was over?
His performance was wonderful. I will say I'm a little surprised that they would give him a bonus for a stoppage that was unquestionably controversial. He dominated the fight anyway. I don't think anyone's going to argue that he was on his way. It was literally with, I think, 29 seconds at the 29-second mark left
less than a minute.
Of round five. Less than a minute. So he was going to win anyway by decision. He may have even finished the choke. We don't know. But Imadai was super tough. I thought Imadai was on his way to, again, fighting the hands and probably making it to the end of the round. So very strange call by referee Chris Tione. I'm really not sure what he saw. Some people said it looked like Imadai's fist might have hit the mat. I saw that, but that's not a tap in my opinion. He went to fight the hands and people said maybe they thought that was a tap. It was a really, really not a great stoppage, unfortunately. So I was surprised. I still think he deserves a bonus because, you know, I always think performance should encapsulate not just the finish, but the performance, the actual performance itself. And it was certainly probably the best we've seen of him outside of maybe the Danny Roberts one. But as far as a more complete performance, Yeah, there's a lot of questions about him. How serious is he? Is he more than just tricks? He had a lot of substance today in addition to the style, and just completely dominated Imadiyev, who, again, is a pretty good striker and could not figure out Pereira today. So really good stuff from Demolidor. Hopefully there's not so much controversy around this finish that we potentially see a no contest, which is something that we were discussing before the show. But it would be very Michel Pereira-y thing of his UFC career for that to happen.
Yeah, it'd be, I mean, I understand why you could do that. Like, rule set wise, you probably should do that.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably gonna be a tough sell at this point. Casey,
think of all the stuff they've never overturned. Think of all the stuff they've never overturned, and they overturned this. Come on, let's not do this.
On this card, like this, after what happened throughout the day in the last 24 hours, good Lord. Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy. Like we said, Muniz got a submission win. Brian Kelleher, 39 seconds, gets it done over Ray Rodriguez, who took the fight last night. So less than 24 hours notice, Ray Rodriguez found out that he was fighting. Viviane Araújo defeats Montana De La Rosa. The commentating in that fight was bizarre, and I thought Super De La Rosa's bizarre game plan was kind of bizarre, too. I'm glad to see that her striking game has evolved a little bit going over to Elevation Fight Team, but didn't really agree with the game plan at all, but it is what it is. Araújo's back in the win column, and then Hunter Azure kicked off the night with a win over Cole Smith. So pretty fun card overall, short and sweet, just the way we like it. But let's go to the peeps.
You ready?
See what the peeps have to say. Yeah, let's get after this thing. This is the people's post-fight show.
I saw a question specifically aimed at Jose and I don't know if you saw it, Casey, from Zach Herder.
Oh, we have so many comments. How am I going to find them?
I don't know if you saw it. Can I just shout it out?
Yeah, shout it.
Zeke Herder. Sorry, yeah, it, I agree. It's way up there. It's hard to find. Jose, they were just asking about Brian Kelleher, your boy. Mm-hmm. Does he need a bigger step up in competition? And we should say, by the way, he was going to fight Ricky Simon tonight. Who's I don't know if you call that a massive step up in competition, but certainly I would say a worthy. It made sense for me matchup wise, yeah. And of course ended up fighting a late notice replacement, Ray Rodriguez, who he handles, and got a nice $50,000 bonus, mm-hmm.
It's his third bonus in 2020.
He should toss maybe a little bit of that money to Ray Rodriguez, otherwise, you know, for letting that happen. But Jose, would you like to break down before we answer the question of what's next for Brian Kelleher, would you like to break down why you think Kelleher has had such good fortune this year? I honestly can't imagine. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
I mean, I don't have to tell you about the scientific results, right? Like, if you look at the scientific method, you have a hypothesis, the experiment, the outcome, then you compare. So he's had how many fights in 2024?
Yeah.
And how many has he won? Three. And how many bonuses does he have? Three. Where did it all start? January. What was he given in January? That's right. Tiger's Eye Crystal, which increases monetary gain. And now that's three wins, three bonuses. So, like, I don't have to tell you what the scientific formula is. It happened again. There you go. That's the answer right there. But, yeah, I just want them to rebook the Ricky Simon fight. I think Brian Kelleher went through so much this week. He stared down with opponent and then didn't even end up fighting him. So, as Jessica Crystal Crew wants to say, Alex, of course, believes now. Don't lie, because he believes in the scientific formula and all that stuff. So, yeah, 100%. The crystal worked again. But I want the Ricky Simon fight, 100%. I think that's the fight to make. Brian Kelleher even said, like, the Sean O'Malley fight that he's called for so long no longer has the mystique, and he wants the Ricky Simon fight. So just book it again, except not on Fight Island.
Jessica, I do not believe. I just teed it up for Jose because I would rather see it coming than walk into a crystal rant. Hopefully, and I just wanted to get it out of the way. So I know there's no stopping him anyway. So there we go. There's your crystal content for tonight. But I agree with Kelleher. Yeah, just I think Ricky Simone's next thing. 2021, I think, is when we'll see Kelleher, if he beats Ricky Simon, really knocking on that top 10 ranking door.
And we're missing some monetary stuff as well. Yes. And we're, first of all, shout out to Kelleher for coming out to Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme, which on the broadcast that I watched on ESPN Plus, I didn't see the damn entrance.
He leaned right into that baldy head persona that Darren Till bestowed on him. I don't know if you watched an interview with Darren Till on the Mac Life. He's even giving Brian Kelleher shout outs for his social media game. So when Darren Till gives you shout out for your persona on social media, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, and that January fight, it was Kelleher's last fight on his deal. So that submission earned him a brand new contract. I'm sure he got some more money. And he's already fought three out of the four fights. So he's on his last fight in his deal. I find it hard to believe the UFC is not just going to lock him up and say, yeah, let's just renegotiate now, get you a new deal and get you a Ricky Simone fight. So he's making more money every single day at this point. So good on him. What a crazy week it was for him. He thought Natividad was out, then false positives. He's back in. They weigh in, they stare down, and then Ray Rodriguez gets in at the 11th hour. And props to Ray Rodriguez. Ray's been grinding on the regional scene for a long time, so happy to see that he got his opportunity, and hopefully he gets to stick around and get a fight with the full training camp.
Why I would just book him against Navidad.
Yeah. Both
Brian Kelleher's opponents, that like his opponent fell out, he replaced him. I just booked that fight.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Also, what was this? Was this Kelleher's like 30-something pro fight? Like, we're talking about Overeem having a million fight. Like, Kelleher has that, yeah, has like double-digit losses, but also he has like 20-plus wins.
He's a gangster. Good on him. I mean, it's just crazy thing. Like, a lot of other fighters just be like, nah, I'll just fight. Let's rebook the fight in like a couple of weeks. But he's just like, nah, screw it. Let's just go. And he got done 39 seconds. He might fight in the next like 3 weeks. Who the hell knows at this point? But not on Fight Island. He doesn't seem to have any interest in that. So what else we got? Yes, the Stone Cold thing was awesome.
Let's talk about Michelle Burr's call out.
Whoa.
hey, I don't write these questions. I don't. I'm just a messenger. I'm just a messenger.
Was Baez's call out the biggest waste ever?
I need context. For, like, why would it be how do you frame that call out as a waste? I'm confused. Someone help me. What's wasteful? What's wasteful about it?
All right. Well, let me flip the question to you, AK. I mean, you're Pereira's, you know, number one guy. You're an
advocate.
You are an advocate. You are like what Paul Heyman is to Brock Lesnar, exactly, when it comes to Michelle Pereira. Exactly.
Yes.
Why was it not a waste?
It's a big name. It's so much better than when people come out. God bless Sean Brady. We were talking about this last week. Sean Brady said, I want a big name. He said it four times, like his post-fight speech. Up next for me should be a big name. I just want a big name. I think it's time for a big name without naming anyone. Again, and I'm not saying Michelle Pereira gets this fight. It's highly unlikely he does anyway. But you've got to speak these things into existence. I hadn't even thought about this as a possible matchup until he said it. And if I'm Masvidal, I mean, I don't take it. Why would you do this? But you have to, like, he's going to at least hear about it. I mean, I feel like it's going to make its way to him. Maybe he does some pithy tweet and that's as far as it goes. But I really want to see that fight now. I think a lot of people want to see that fight. And again, if it ends up being something that people demand and that can produce, you know, draw eyeballs for Jorge Masvidal, it's like 10 times as compelling as the Nate Diaz fight, isn't it? Like, what are we talking about here? Waste.
Why wouldn't Masvidal take it? Is he scared? You think he's scared, Alex? You think he's scared?
No, I did not say.
You just called Gamebred a coward. That's why I heard.
I would never do that. Don't tweet that. Don't tweet that. Don't tweet. No sosh, guys. No sosh.
I wouldn't say it was a waste, but you could tell like it was. He didn't really take. I don't even think like even Michelle Pereira like took the call out that seriously. He just shot his shot. He had a big smile on his face. He just used a moment and he knew people were going to talk about it. So I thought it was intelligent in one way, but completely unrealistic.
I don't know, Mike. I actually think that was calculated, though. I think like he definitely was planning to. Oh, you're right. You know, he was definitely planning to do that if he won. Yeah.
Yeah. He knew Twitter was going to blow up and be like, oh my God, guess what he just did? Guess who he just called out? Masvidal, and got everybody talking. So in that sense, it was a good move, but that fight is not happening.
So what's the next fight?
Clip that. Can we clip that audio for when this fight gets booked? Yeah. Timestamp. Okay, hold up. I got it. Timestamp. Okay.
Well, I mean, maybe end of next year. Maybe, who knows? Things might happen. You'll have to find out Monday. My choice on Michelle Pereira. Okay. I think that's gonna
I like a Randy Brown or Alan Joban fight. Those are two names that aren't ranked, and at least they have people will recognize them. Yeah, Casey disagrees with everything. That makes sense. He just wants dumb fights. I don't really care. Everyone, someone tweeted Kazmat Shamayev too. I'm like, I'm not gonna say no to that, but it's not gonna happen.
By the way, whoever you know, the matchmakers putting him in there with Imadaev, perfect. That was like the absolute best guy to put him in there
We've seen what he can do against like smaller welterweights. I think a long rangy fighter like Randy Brown will answer questions. And then Alan Joban is just a name who has been proven that he can get hit. So if you want a fight that will add another highlight, like Alan Joban is very impressive. Trains at Kings MMA. He's a really good fighter. Has that win over Mike Perry. And now everyone wants that fight. So I think that those two names are fine with me.
He could sell the fight too. I think Joban could sell the fight. 100%. Really do a good job selling the fight.
Anyone that's in fashion magazines with Gigi Hadid yes. can sell a fight.
I'm glad you mentioned Mike Perry, because it seems like every week at this point, when a welterweight fights on a card and a welterweight gets a victory, it's always, oh, he should fight Mike Perry next. Like, Mike Perry, we don't know when he's coming back at this point. Like, we don't know when that's happening. He's got himself into a little bit of a pickle here with the law, so we don't know when he's coming back. Like, the UFC has said, until he completes a program, they're not even going to book him a fight. So let's not match him up with anybody up with Mike Perry yet until, like, we get the go-ahead that we can start matching people up. But I would love – I know Nico Price is fighting Donald Cerrone, but Nico Price versus Michel Pereira would be redonkulous.
I would love the winner of that. Like, you're going to see Cowboy fighting him?
Yeah, that would be great too. There we go. Done and done. We just made that happen.
What do you want – what's your pick? What's your fight, Casey?
Michel Pereira versus Robbie Lawler. We can move on now.
Yeah. I want Robbie Lawler to fight Mike Perry. And if Mike Perry's going to be out for a while, then Robbie Lawler
Mike Perry is not a good citizen of this world right now, so I don't know if he needs to be cage fighting right now. Let's get Robbie Lawler a nice big paycheck, and that's a co-main event on Fight Night, or a nice pay-per-view main card somewhere, you know.
Yeah, but if Pereira's antics can't bring out the best in Robbie Lawler, then truly we have seen the last of
Robbie Lawler. We need someone that's going to bring out that Robbie Lawler that we love, not the Robbie Lawler we see now, because we know it's in there. We see it. It's in his eyes still. You see it in his eyes. But I think Michel Pereira is that guy that can bring that Robbie Lawler out.
Him and Brady would be interesting. I mean,
it would be a fun fight.
That would be because I don't know if we call Pereira like a prospect at this point. Like, he's beyond that. He's had so much experience. So that'd be interesting. Although Brady wants to fight Robbie Lawler himself. What's next for Viviane Araújo? She looked good coming off the Jessica I loss, which everybody thought she was going to win. And that was kind of a total letdown, but it seemed like
Jessica I also came in like 30 pounds over too. Remember?
Yes.
And it was just one of those performances that kind of just put her in a really good spot, but she took a couple of steps back. But she looked good against Montana tonight. Jose, what do you want to see next for Araújo?
Andrea Lee's fighting Roxy, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I think the winner of that makes sense. They're all like, 7, 8, 9, 10? They're all like right in that bubble. Unless Macy Barber wants to come back, if she's back from her knee injury, sure, why not? Alexa Grasso looks awesome at flyweight. So if they want to book that fight, I like that fight as a fight. Like, I don't know if Viviane Araújo wants to take a step back in the rankings. That's up to her. But, like, I like that fight just as a high-level martial arts competition. Like, those two just don't stop moving forward, throwing combinations. And then I think Jillian Robinson somewhere in there, too. Molly McCann somewhere. She might not be top 15, but there's a lot of fights for Viviane Araújo to take. But selfishly, I want the Alexa Grasso fight or the winner of Roxy Andrea. Or if she wants a fight that will move her higher up the rankings, the winner of Roxy Andrea Lee.
Yeah, what do you think, AK? Well, no, we're saving that, AK. Casey, what do you think? We're saving.
Watch the show Monday. Watch the show.
I like the Grasso fight. Even though Grasso might not be in front of her ranking wise, I think name value wise, that's the fight for Vivian if she wants to get a bigger name out there. Because I think Grasso's got despite her ranking, just because she's new to the division. I think that's a fight to make. But Barbara's also a great fight, but I'm not sure Barbara's her timeline right now.
And I think Grasso is just one of the more exciting female fighters out there in terms of what happens inside the octagon. Like, she's never in boring fights. No. Like, even that Carlos Sparza fight that she lost was awesome.
Yeah.
And then her fight
against Jillian Fulton. It was very close, too.
Yeah. It was super close. Yeah. Like, I thought Grasso had won that fight, but it's not a robbery.
Yeah.
Not a robbery review candidate for AK Lee, but so I want that fight selfishly.
Okay, was it just me? But during the how do you say her last name again? Araújo fight. God, I just wanted her to throw a combination. She was throwing those freaking jabs that were just destroying De La Rosa, but it's like, follow it up with something. But she looked great. Yeah, she looked great.
And then like a leg kick, that was like her bread and butter for 15 rounds.
It was working, but it's just.
If you listen to the commentary, it was a super close fight, which I don't agree
with at all. And De La Rosa's corner, apparently. I did not hear this. I saw people mentioning on social media. De La Rosa's corner going to the third said, "This is a close fight. You just got to take this one," which is not great advice. I mean, I can tell her to keep fighting hard. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think they should have been a little more realistic about it. I don't know what difference it would have made, because I do feel like in the stand-up she was just outclassed. But that advice is very strange. Maybe they could hear the commentary too. That could have been. We are talking about the Apex here, right? Maybe they heard the commentary. They're like, oh, it's close. Listen, you know, we can hear DC, we can hear Anik. So yeah, definitely one of those unique circumstances that we only see in the UFC Apex during these times.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to go off on a giant rant, but like, open scoring. If they wouldn't, if De La Rosa, if her corner were going like, you are down two rounds, you have to knock this lady out. That's exciting. But basically, your corner's like, you got to win this round. It's like, no, you got to finish her.
She was fighting pretty hard, though. I do feel like De La Rosa, even to the end, was really getting in there. For someone who was clearly being like outclassed, she really kept getting in there. I don't know how much more she could have gone out for some knockout. Some fighters don't have that in them, that kind of wild flurry. It's just not what they do, right? They have a discipline. They have a game plan. And you're in there. You're kind of an autopilot. You stick to it. So this is just me crapping on open scoring, by the way, because you brought it up. But
no, like, not even – next week's headliner, Angela Hill, was like, what is the commentator's talking about? Like, this is not a close fight. And then speaking on what Casey said, though, or when the fight, like their corner, the corner work and everything, like Augusto Sakai's, I had him up 2-0. I think a lot of people had him up 2-0. His corner said, you might have lost that first round. So we're going to
Second round, I think. But yeah,
second round. They were like, you probably lost. It's 1-1 in our minds right now, though. So the opposite of what Montana De La Rosa's corner said.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there's no. I don't think Montana won any of the rounds. Second round, once you started throwing kicks, it changed the you know, a little bit of the shape of the fight. Like, it got a little more competitive. Like, Araújo still won the round. I mean, you could just look at their faces; you could tell like the damage that was being compiled. But you know, De La Rosa is tough as nails. Yeah. So got to give her credit for that.
The live significant strike stats at the end of the fight actually made it look really close. Oh, by the way, thank you for the question, Kenta Thusen. I think it was like 78-74, which again, I don't think reflects how close the fight actually was. And I think when the official stats come out, by the way, on Monday or whenever those stats are compiled, I have a feeling that those significant strike numbers are not going to look as close as we saw on the broadcast. I could be wrong, but they can waver greatly from the on-screen stats when you see them. So I think Araújo won that one comfortably.
We have some royalty here. The ambassador of trance asked, explain Overeem's durability. Fighting at his age, having been knocked out himself many times, how is he still mentally sharp and successful? Is he just a freak of nature? AK, I'll let you tackle this one since we can't make any matchups here.
Yeah, I mean, I think freak of nature describes a lot of high level athletes and veterans in MMA, certainly in the heavyweight division. You really have to be made of sterner stuff to last this long in a division where people hit so hard. How do you explain? I mean, keep in mind, you have to remember he's so high level with his striking. Yes, he's. I know people are like, okay, he's getting knocked out 14 times in his career or something like that. Yes, 14 times in his career, several times in the UFC and several times in recent years. But he can really take a punch. I know people are going to say, oh, but he gets knocked out all the time. He gets knocked out all the time, again, either getting caught by something, just a super powerful shot, like an uppercut by a Francis Ngannou, or again, just you know, something at the end of the fight, getting injured like by Jairzinho. So his defense is really, really high level. It always has been. The experience is so obvious when you see him fight. So I think that's a key to his durability, and why, like, I think the question specifically, why is he so sharp? How does he maintain this? It's like, when you've been fighting as long as he has, so much of the stuff is instinctual. He really strikes me as someone who actually, you know, every athlete says they learn from their experiences, learn from their losses. He really strikes me as someone who has, again, both in MMA, in kickboxing, you know, everything he's done. So that really is the key. I know it sounds simple, but I think for a lot of fighters, that's finding that discipline and finding that consistency is hard to do. And that is something Overeem, throughout his career, I think consistent is definitely a way I would describe him, especially in the latter stages as he's gotten older. You see a lot of consistency. So that's the key. They say that about everything, right? Practice, practice, practice. Consistency is key. That's really it.
And I think this has kind of been a theme over the last couple of weeks. Doesn't matter if you have 5 fights, 10 fights, or have Overeem's experience. Sometimes a change of scenery can lead to a change of perspective. It seems like him going to Colorado and being with Elevation, it's changed some things up. It's changed the way he views himself as a fighter. You know, maybe he got a little extra confidence working with guys like Curtis Blaydes and working on his ground. I'm sure his ground game's improved immensely. Of course, his ground and pound is superbly underrated. But, I mean, sometimes you just need that. Like, you just need a change of scene. And and perspective changes along with it. And I think Overeem's found that even at 40 years old, which is unbelievable. Casey, what do you think? How do you define Overeem's success here after, you know, a lot of people gave up on him not too long ago?
Evolution. I can't think of a high level fighter that has evolved so much, considering he came into the UFC part of his career. Like, oh, he's the greatest striker the heavyweight division has ever seen. Tonight, he lost to striking. If this was a stand-up fight, Sakai wins that fight. He wins that fight. Easy. So the fact that it was a domination on the ground, and I think this evolution that Overeem has taken upon himself, especially going to Colorado and training up guys like Curtis Blaydes, I think he's like, you know what? I go back to him being a prize fighter. He sees this is the long game. Being an older fighter, I think he just feels I can fight longer at a higher level if I take these fights to the ground. And we saw it tonight. If that fight stays standing, or if Sakai gets up or stops those takedowns, I have no doubt Sakai wins that fight. Actually, the whole buildup was like Sakai was like, you know, oh, this is Curitiba Muay Thai versus, you know, Dutch kickboxing Muay Thai. Like, he actually won that. He won the Muay Thai match tonight, but unfortunately, this was mixed martial arts, and he lost the mixed martial arts match. So, evolution, man, it's very impressive.
Yeah, I would agree. What else we got?
Edgy Bruh in the comments says, "You're right, Casey. It's Overeem's ground and pound. What is great?" You are on points. You are on point tonight, my friend. Edgy Bruh.
Edgy Bruh.
I also think he just trains super smart. Mm-hmm. Like, he trains like he's never really had an injury. Like, he trains and takes care of his body so well. His training reminds me of Demetrius Johnson, where everything is so meticulous and planned out that he knows when to pump, like, take his foot off the gas just from – he knows how his body will react to certain things. He also doesn't take breaks. Like, he's constantly training, constantly fighting. Like we said, prize fighter, as long as the check clears, he's down to fight. Like, he'll lose two in a row, fight a prospect, win, and then is thrown right back in there against Alexei Oleinik, who has like 70 fights, like maybe the only fighter with more fights than Overeem if he does. So I just think that his body is just so used to training that when he stops training, that's the Overeem I want to see, like what his body reacts to not putting in like 6 days of work.
He loves it. Like, you can tell he still loves it. What else you got? Thank you, Ambassador.
Thank you for honoring us with your presence.
Yes, it was an honor and a privilege.
You find one minute, find another question.
We got probably go for like 10 more minutes.
Yeah, hold on. Matt, oh my goodness, a lot of...
John G says, Mike Heck wearing the freshest white tee of all time.
That's
well
right.
Well done, Mike.
Yeah, I played golf and I didn't bring enough clothes on the trip, so I'm wearing the long sleeve and the white tee. I can't show you all
it's
the
good look.
Yet.
It's a good look.
Good questions. A lot of comments.
These guys are so hilarious. Our YouTube, you guys in the YouTube section, you're too funny.
What's next for Sakai? How about that?
Ooh, Sakai versus Olenek. That's like perfect, actually.
I don't hate it.
Mike, write that one down, please, for Monday's show. And we will not. Who is this? We will not credit them. We will not.
Olenek. Who else is around? Like Walt Harris. Like, if we're talking about like Volkov is fun. Cyril Gane. Cyril
Gane. Walt's got a fight, right? And Cyril's got a fight too.
Oh, are they fighting each other?
No. I forget who Walt's fighting.
That'd be a fun fight. Who's Tanner Bozer fighting?
He's fighting Andrei Arlovsky.
That's right.
Waxmas one, I think, was throwing out a bunch of suggestions earlier. I think he or she also said, or someone else picked up on this thread and also said they wanted to see Overeem and Verdum fight again for like a fourth time. So that was just one of
them.
Verdum is not even running out of the UFC anymore. And I don't know if we want to see that fight again. What's next for Sakai?
Harris is fighting Alexander Volkov at UFC 254.
Okay, that's right. So that scraps a lot of my plans. I don't know. Junior's coming off a knockout loss.
I thought they fought, but that was I got confused with Blagoy. Blagoy fought Junior, not Augusto Sakai.
I mean, he's got options.
Sakai beat Blagoy too in his last fight.
Yes, yeah. So
if they want to do the Junior fight, like two Brazilian powerhouses, like coming off losses,
Fight Island, Fight Island special.
What about Gus? heavyweight Gus.
Well, that froze us all.
I
want
to see Gus go back to light heavyweight.
OSP.
I think so.
He's got options.
He's got Michelle
Pereira versus James Vick.
I kind of forgot about James Vick, to be honest. I forgot he went. Has he won at 170 yet? I know he's going up in weight.
He only had one. He had the Nico Price fight, which ended so bizarrely.
Oh yeah.
Was that this year? His first fight at 70.
Was that this year?
That was last year.
Late last year.
That was the Tampa card, I think.
October.
Does anyone look worse getting knocked out than James Vick?
Yeah, he's had a rough go of it. He's still got the talent. I just don't know. Like
he is, but like, he's also losing to like really good fighters.
Yeah.
Like Gaethje, really. Felder, Hooker, Nico Price, like all those like four of the most violent men.
Remember
and
the
like, Paul Felder punctured his lung in that fight.
Yeah. Remember the longest time James Vick, he could not get a top 10 opponent. He won like, what, 7 straight or something, or 9 of 10, just could not get a top 10 opponent. Then he finally gets these top 10 opponents and just cannot catch a break. And these guys just crushing him. Yeah. So, but again, you have to make that jump at some point.
And James Vick, unfortunately, made the mistake of calling Justin Gaethje the Homer Simpson of MMA. I was like, ooh. And James Vick did the whole, you come from a little B league. I'm in the UFC. I was like, oh, bro, don't do this. That's a bad game plan.
Did he also walk out to Eminem? I mean,
he also has a chain link fence tattooed onto his shoulder.
Yeesh.
I haven't heard much from James Vick since the Price loss.
Hopefully just resting. Honestly, for a guy like that, we talk about longevity, I think part of it is getting rest. When you suffer three knockouts and brutal knockouts in like four fights, you've got to just take some time away.
He's been doing a lot of hunting, I've seen on social media.
Yeah, probably.
Before we leave, let's talk a little bit about next week.
Who else is fighting on the Waterson card?
According to UFC.com, let me quickly look this up because UFC.com has been a little slow.
Well, we know Andrea Lee's fighting Roxanne Modafferi. Kama Worthy and Otman Azaitar is now the co-main event for that card. Yes. Not Andrea Lee and Modafferi, which was originally thought.
That's kind of awesome.
Julia Avila is fighting Sajara Eubanks on that card. That's a new matchup. Alan Patrick is fighting Bobby Green.
Oh, my God. That fight is awesome.
That's a great fight. Ed Herman is now fighting Mike Rodriguez. Matt Schnell versus Tyson Nam. That's a fun fight.
There's a lot of bangers on that card.
Yeah. Camacho and Brock Weaver. Billy Q and Kyle Nelson. Brian Barberina is back in our lives by Anthony Ivey. Roosevelt Roberts versus Matt Frivola. Sabina Mazo versus Justine Kish. It's a pretty good card.
That's a lot of fun scraps.
Unfortunately, guys, according to UFC.com, though, only two of these fights are official. The Michelle Waterson Angela Hill main event and Billy Quarantillo versus Kyle Nelson. So,
because nothing's official until they're in the octagon.
Which was proven, Jose, you're correct. Your axiom was proven today. Boy, that was this lead up to today's card just today was just constant updates.
They did flash the main card on the broadcast.
Yes.
That's how I knew that.
It is real.
Kama Worthy is down in the co-main event, which, by the way, if you haven't checked out Kama Worthy's interview on What the Heck, he's very Kama Worthy. Like, he's awesome.
I love that Worthy Ottman fight. I think to me, that's my people's main event.
That's an awesome fight. That's a great co-main event. No disrespect to Andrew Lee and Roxanne Modafferi. I mean, they're still on the main card as long as they're not buried on the prelims, but this is a great main event.
Roxanne versus Andrea Lee has actual title implications or like importance for the division. But in terms of what gets me up out of bed, Cameron Worthy, Ottman Azaitar freaking rules.
That's a great fight.
Casey, I think we have to go to Waxmas 1 again because someone is saying they asked a great question. What are our thoughts on, and also we are obligated to talk about this next fighter at least once per show. Kamzat Chimaev versus Gerald Meerschaert and Kamzat Chimaev versus Damian Maia. Two fights that are, again, not official as Jose would note, but are apparently in the planning stages or somewhere closer to that supposed to happen. So again, for Kamzat Chimaev versus Gerald Meerschaert at middleweight and Kamzat Chimaev versus Damian Maia at welterweight, which is both supposed to be happening. What do you guys think?
Well, Chimaev versus Mearshart, as far as I know, is done. Like, that's happening on September 19th. That is good to go.
Is that Abu Dhabi or the state? That's in the U.S.,
that's
right?
That's the 19th. Kamzat tweeted today. I am in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 15 fights on that card. 15 or 16 fights at this point.
So five fights.
I think it's a good match. I think it's a great matchup. I think that's a perfect kind of a fight to book him with a guy like Gerald Mearshart, who is very, he does have a lot of skill. He's good. Had some ups and downs. Great on the ground.
Great on the ground.
Like people are saying, we need to fight a guy. We need Chimaev to fight a guy who can wrestle and can work on the ground. I think AK's been saying that for a while.
These guys can't stop a takedown. He didn't do anything. He hasn't fought anyone that can stop a takedown.
Prove me wrong.
That was my impression of AK.
Prove me wrong. Show me that you are this elite prospect. That look, I've seen it with my own eyes. Those first two fights, amazingly impressive. Again, even given the level of competition. If you know, we've seen enough fights. You know when someone is a legit prospect. You know when you see it. You know within the first takedown, they do. You can see it. But again, like Mike said, this is a real veteran test now. Gerald Mearshart. I mean, obviously, I think Chimaev will win, but I still think the booking of two fights extremely presumptuous. So now I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical again. I don't know if he does. Guess I think maybe the Mearshart fight is tough. Maybe he can't make the Maya fight.
All right, Jose, let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on Chimaev versus Maya? Because there's one person on Twitter who tagged me in something, and people were commenting about it, that this is kind of a slap in the face to Damian Maya. Like, because he has one fight left in his deal. He's hoping to possibly get one more from all sorts of rumors and reports. But, like, I think you'd want to see Damian Maya, like, in a fun fight. Like, the guy's been calling out Diego Sanchez for, like, 18 months at this point. Like, I have one fight left. That's a guy I want to fight. Like, I always wanted to see Maya versus Wonderboy. Like, one fight left. I think those two guys at this point, that would just be a lot of fun. I even mentioned Robbie Lawler last week versus Damian Maya. That would be interesting. But Khamzat Chimaev from Damian Maya's potential final fight of his career, like, is... Do you agree with this? Like, Casey's got this look on his face, but I want to get your thoughts first.
Well, first of all, he has to beat Gerald Mearshart first, which is not an easy task. Like, I don't understand the matchmaking where it's like if they just booked it against Maya or just Gerald Mearshart, like, fine. But, like, also, I'm assuming Gerald Mearshart's at middleweight, right?
Yep.
And then so he's going to fight a middleweight.
Yes.
And then cut down a welterweight and fight. Like, come on. Just pick a division. Because until he fights Damian Maya, that's three non-welterweights he's fought. Like, yeah, he fought Reese McKee at welterweight, but Reese McKee is a lightweight. We all know that. So if they want to give him Damian Maya, like, I like that fight as a fight. Like, it's going to be a fun fight to watch. But, like, I don't want to see Damian Maya ride off into the sunset as another victim of the hype train that is Khamzat Chimaev. Like, if they want to give him one more fight after that, like, hey, do this favor for us, we will give you a big name after, fine, I understand. But look who, like, Damian Maya has lost to, like, Colby Covington, like, Kamaru Usman. There's obviously a bunch of fights he's lost, but, like, recently, like, those, and, like, Gilbert Burns, like, those three are, like, the top three at welterweight. Like, those are, like, three of the top five. So, like, he only loses to the best. If Khamzat Chimaev beats Damian Maya in the way that those guys did, like, give him top five. Just give him Leon Edwards. I don't care. Like, that would prove enough for me. But I feel bad for Damian Maya as it is. But I like the fight as a fight, but I would like to see Damian Maya get a really big fight before he finally rides off into the sunset.
Well, I'm interested in it.
You know, Jose, if you listen to these Khamzat Chimaev stands like Casey and others, he should be facing friggin' Kamaru Usman tomorrow. I mean,
really,
he's doing Maya a favor by stepping back in the rankings and giving this veteran a shot, apparently.
And I like Khamzat Chimaev. I think he is a legit prospect. I think he handles himself very well in the media. Like, his mannerisms are very, like, I'm sure you guys saw Khabib Nurmagomedov had a press conference in Russia just to, like, answer questions because everyone's had so many questions for him that he just did a – he just did a press conference in Russia. And one of the questions for him was about Khamzat Chimaev. Like, they're asking Khabib about him. So he clearly moves the needle. Like, just look at our YouTube mentors. He moves the needle. So I think he's super talented. They put the rocket ship on him. I think it's a little presumptuous to book him two fights down the road already in two separate weight class. But I don't have a problem with either matchmaking as long as Damian Maya gets a fight after that.
I think Damian Maya is in a classic lose-lose situation, because if he loses, it's, you know, you lose to the hype train, like you said. But if he wins, you know how this sport is. Like, you're hot until you're not anymore.
Exposed.
Like, yes.
Exposed him.
See, he was a can after all. He was overrated after all. See what happens when you put him against a contender. Like, Mike and Casey were crazy for trying to book him in top 10, top 15 matchups. Like, it's a lose-lose for him. Like, that's why I don't like it.
Absolutely not.
Here we go.
That is not a lose-lose for Maya.
Why?
Dude, because Dana White loves Shmaev. Shmaev and Dana White will promote the hell out of this fight. It could probably be I'm assuming this fight, if they fight, a main event for a fight night in Abu Dhabi or something like that.
It'll be a co-main. All the main events are taken.
Okay, well, whatever. It'll be a featured fight. It'll be the people's main event. And man, no, I think this is like just a great prize fighting fight because like you prospect versus vet. If this is the last fight for Maya, like, so why don't we want this fight booked? Because we think Maya's gonna get his ass kicked, or we think Maya is an easy win for Maya? I'm confused.
I don't know. I think either way, it's bad for Maya.
But I think Maya's not getting a title shot, he's never gonna get a title shot. He's not unless he goes out on it. If his retirement fight will be a title shot, which I don't think anyone's thinking is gonna happen. No, that's not gonna happen. So this is the best to me. This is the best. If Maya can crush this. Maybe the hottest welterweight prospect in years. I can't think of one. Welterweight prospect in years. If Maya can crush him, then Maya leaves going like, you know what? I'm still a badass. I'm not this old man. Like, I'm leaving out on a happy ending. And if he loses, he knows it's his time to move on. And I think
what if that's not, like, again, that's not my, that might not be what he wants. Like, we're making a lot of, he might not want to go out being, I want a badass. Maybe he wants to go out fighting someone in the top 10.
Diego Sanchez
is the guy that got a BS win over AK's fucking favorite dude in the world. And it's like, come on, man. Sanchez, he lost.
He's not on a title path. Like, that's who he wants. Like, yeah, I have one fight left. I want to fight this guy. Like, I want to fight Robbie Lawler.
Damian Maya, like, man. Fight Damian Maya. Take it, Damian Maya.
Casey's right, though. That it being a co-main event, it won't, because I think at this point, Khamzat is getting like that. We'll get that like Sean O'Malley treatment. Because remember, Sean O'Malley was the co-main of it was a pay-per-view, so it's a little different. But I think he would get the same treatment. So I cannot wait to hear Stephen A. Smith try and say Khamzat Chimaev, some overwritten, overcooked ESPN promo, comparing him to friggin', I don't know, I don't want to say Luka Doncic again, because that's what we saw in the stupid O'Malley promo. But something to that. Who's a baseball? Give me someone in baseball, Jose. Mookie Betts saying like, Mookie Betts. This kid is like, yeah, Mookie Betts, the way he throws the ball through the... Okay, I'm losing grip on this metaphor, but I'm sorry.
The way he hits those home runs.
Tatis, grand slam, baby. I am already bracing myself for the Chimaev ESPN hype video and just no.
Storylines. I love it.
Just remember, as Jose said, he's got to beat Gerald Meerschaert first before that can happen.
Yes, it's true.
And that's not going to be easy.
No, not at all.
Easy at all. Gerald Meerschaert seemed very fired up for that. He said he's not going to physically be able to make it to the Damian Maya fight after he steps in the
octagon. Gerald Meerschaert has, like, how many wins does Khamzat Chimaev have total?
12?
Yeah, I thought it was 12.
That means he has almost two, like, that means Gerald Meerschaert almost has two times as many submission wins.
Yes.
Like, everyone's talking about Damian Maya being this big test on the ground. Gerald Meerschaert has 20 submissions.
Hold on. He's 8-0.
He's 8-0.
He's 8-0.
It feels like he's 12-0.
I know. I thought, yeah.
Gerald Meerschaert has more losses than Khamzat Chimaev has total wins. Like, this is a good test. It's also a middleweight.
I do like that. I do like the Meerschaert fight. I do like that. I think it's a fun fight.
Like, Meerschaert is a legitimate middleweight.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Kevin Shumayev,
I think, is a legit welterweight.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a big test for him. So he's going to go middleweight, lightweight, middleweight, welterweight. That's Khamzat my first four fights.
I just want to say, I know we're wrapping up soon, but we're almost up to 1,000 viewers. The viewership has for some reason gone up. Maybe it's because it's a relatively early night. But I just say, you guys are crazy. Everyone who watches this, you guys are insane. You guys are beautiful. I love you guys. You guys are amazing. But you guys are crazy. All right. I'm glad you're watching us. I'm glad you're spending your night with us. I love all of you, but that's wild. I don't know what's going on.
Maya heat.
Yeah. I think the ratings shot up when we met. Somehow people just knew that we were talking about Shamayev.
I'm glad that these 1,000 people are staying in and watching us rather than going outside during a pandemic. So you're not crazy.
Incredible.
There you go.
Incredible.
You know, we get that. Let's get two more in. Two more comments. More,
what do we got? What do we got?
That was a heated one. See what happens when Shamayev gets brought up? It's 20 minutes on Shamayev, no matter what show we do when his name gets brought up. It's unbelievable.
Really good.
The last question was about Watterson Hill, too. I don't even know how we got
It's a good card. I forgot how good that card was because we're so focused on, like, how uninteresting, like, this card got after, like, all the fallouts. And then plus, you know, you look at Santos and Glover Teixeira being off next week. Everyone's like, oh, God, this card sucks. And now if you really look at it, it's actually really good.
Hey, man, nothing's official till they fight. So for all That's we know, true. Five fights could be gone.
Well, I find the final question. I'm going to throw this comment up.
Happy birthday to Esther Lynn.
I was going to end with that. Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica.
Jessica. Spoiler. Another spoiler tonight.
Spoiler alert.
Another spoiler. Someone, I don't know if I watched the show or not. I was tweeting the results from tweeting all the stuff from our main card today. And I tweeted the results of the first fight, a decision. And the very first comment was like, yo, didn't even say the result on ESPN Plus yet. Could you wait? Why did you tweet this out so quickly? So I apologize to that person on Twitter to whom I spoiled the result of Hunter Azure versus Cole Smith. I must have spoiled it by a solid like 15 seconds. I apologize. I'm a loose cannon sometimes. You know, I don't understand.
Dude, like I was like, is it going to be a unanimous decision or a split decision for Azure? Who knows?
I had to hide my phone in my hat because of those spoilers. And I'm not even joking. I was like, I think I was like a good 40 seconds behind the rest. Shamayev is like the thing from... I gotta spread this out. I can't see the rest.
This is for Jose. This
thing
is Jose.
Shamayev is like the thing from comic books.
That's just not true.
Oh, I could see him doing that. This ESPN, ABC, Disney tie-in. You know, I think Disney does all of it. Does it for now? So.
I believe Marvel and Disney don't have the rights to the cinematic Fantastic Four.
So I think they do now. I think they do.
That'd be unfortunate. Yeah. That movie should never exist. Anyway, they're 0-3 anyway. I don't think Stephen A. Smith knows what the thing is either.
No, I don't know who he. That's a little bit. I mean, it's a pretty well known character, but that's a pull for him given his knowledge base. I mean, to put it nicely. By the way, guys, we didn't even mention Bellator 245 on Friday, right? That's next week, right?
They have two events next week.
Yeah. Yes. So we're saying like, man, we got a good card. We also got the Machida Davis Turi match, which I'm actually really looking forward to.
Plus, I will unfortunately be in a wedding, so I will miss them.
Oh. Plus, Kat Zingano making her Bellator debut featherweight. So, and some other Ed Roos fighting, Raymond Daniels. That's a good one. Kat
Zingano, future cyborg opponent.
I think if she wins, I'm pretty sure right away I feel like they're feeding her a much lesser known opponent to give her a win.
Which is great. It's a tune-up fight.
Kat hasn't fought since Megan Anderson
sliced her eyeball. Yeah.
So I don't have an issue with the fight.
No. Yeah.
And then the Saturday card we have. The bantamweight title fight between, which probably no offense to the rest of the combatants, but the fight of the weekend is Juan Archuleta versus Patchy Mix.
Absolutely.
Which is bantamweight title. John Fitch versus Neiman Gracie is interesting at 170. Good. And then Liz Carmouche fights Deanna Bennett.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun too.
Is the Fitch Neiman fight not a rematch? Is that a rematch? Am I crazy? Nah. Did they not fight in the tournament? I thought they fought. Oh, no. They didn't.
No.
I'm crazy.
Okay. Rory and John Fitch fought to a draw. Okay. So Rory moved on in a technicality.
Yeah.
And then he beat Neiman.
Okay. Yeah, two good Bellator. Man, this is going to be a busy one. This is going to be a busy week.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. We got a couple questions. Most people are just kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. Talking about, you know, we want to talk about Colby Woodley, but I figure we got plenty of time to talk about that.
We got time because I'll be there, and then we can talk all we want about it.
Yes. Yes. Do we have any other questions?
Nah, we're good.
He's trying to find a banger. Yes, once again.
Yo, happy birthday.
Birthday. I'm not sure if that's a joke. Is that a joke?
I think they just spell on their keyboard, but.
Well done.
Gonna argue with Mother Jesus?
The best in the business, her birthday today. So everyone, please, in the comments, sing happy birthday. Sing it in the privacy of your own home. We can hear you. So
everyone tweet videos of you singing
happy birthday. Yes.
There we go. Alex.
But tweet them at Alex.
Oh, she will. What, me? Yeah, Alex. Okay.
Esther's birthday present will be Alex being bombarded with videos.
Tweet it at Alex Savas. That's at A-L-E-X-S-A-V-A-S on Twitter. And
I got to say, big shout out to the UFC. I sent Dana a text saying, hey, it's my wife's birthday. Can we, you know, slash some fights off tonight? You know, let's get it so we have a little more, you know, time to watch some Netflix tonight, you know, relax. So big shout out to Dana for, you know, pulling some fights, you know.
I hear you watching
hooking Avatar us up. Now. Hooking us up.
I hear you watching Avatar now, Casey.
I am watching Avatar.
Has life been changed? Welcome to the 21st century.
You know what? I enjoy it. I'm enjoying Avatar. I just finished book one, season one. Yeah, so
that's the kiddie one where it starts off real juvenile and kind of turns a lot of people off the first few episodes, and then when they venture off.
You know, I appreciate you saying that because that was actually my one critique when I was watching with Esther. I was like, I really like this, but like, I can tell it's a kids show. It's for kids.
And this is for just Casey. Everyone that's listening, just you can tune off if you want. That's because Aang was frozen when he was like 11. So he's still a kid. So he's never matured. So as the show goes on, it will become like you grow with the character, which is why it's so great.
I think Casey was saying that he realized it was a kid's show, and he was like, how did Jose know that this was right on my level? And that's what he was saying. I think he was shocked that it was like, oh, yeah. He was like, oh, this is perfect for me. How did he know? Thank goodness.
And then 100% watch the live-action movie because everyone needs to suffer like I did in 2010 in that movie theater.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, AK. Oh, yeah, wow. Sorry.
It's like when they people in Around the Horn when they just go gray.
Oh, this is like an in memoriam. I'm just going to freeze.
You guys remember AK? He was a good guy. He was a good guy.
He was nice.
He was nice. Raptors suck, though, but he was nice.
He was around.
Did you freeze him, too?
I think you turned the microwave on.
That's my in memoriam.
Oh, okay. You do a very good corpse.
Wow, Casey, that was awesome.
If you could do it, to put the date next to my name. My 84.
Remember
when I dumped Kaylee?
I thought like someone ran the microwave in their house.
No, I'm just dead, apparently. So.
Yeah, I dunked on him so hard that his body shut down.
What a lovely, morbid way to end the show, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm back.
Unreal. All right. I think we've exhausted everything we could on our 7-fight card.
Please shut this down, Mike.
Yes, that is it. Thank you all for watching. You guys are crazy. We love all of you. Jose, go ahead.
Tune in on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Tonight's bonus winner, Brian Kelleher, is making his return to the A-side.
Crystal talk.
I messaged him. I go A-side. I go A-side Wednesday. And he's just like got the tiger's eye in hand. I was like, here. Boom.
Hey, there we go. We're making things happen. Monday is Labor Day. That's usually when we record between the links. So honestly, I have no idea what's gonna happen with that. So we're gonna figure that out. And
I'm working. I'm on the clock.
All right. I'm on for like a few hours, but we'll figure it out. We'll see if we can get the combatants. If not, maybe we go live on Tuesday for a little while. Yeah. Do it that way. I don't know.
Have fun.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear. What the hell, you know? It's MMA after all. So we're out of here. For Jose, Casey, AK, I am Mike Heck. We'll do it again all week long. Get you ready for like 17 fight cards next weekend. So thank you for watching. We'll see you. Enjoy your long weekend here in the U.S.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.